Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today. Lutheran ministry to refugees in Lebanon is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Hello and welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers, pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for your prayerful and financial support of Lutheran Radio UK. I'd also like to encourage you to go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, to find the nearest Lutheran congregation to where you live. I'd like to welcome to Lutheran Radio UK, Fadi Khairala. Fadi is the director of the Lutheran Hour in Beirut, Lebanon. And recently, he gave a presentation at the Lutheran Disaster Response Conference held in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I was wondering, could you tell us a little bit about the current situation in Lebanon?
As you know, the situation is very bad. We have now around 1.3 million refugees in Lebanon. They are scattered across the country in tens of thousands of small camps, between 30 and 60 tents each, spread there in the valleys and hills of Lebanon, without any infrastructure, without any running water, without any support or being taken care of by the government.
Virtually every night we see on the news reports that these refugees seem to be coming from Syria. Can you give us some more background on that?
Yes, as you know, since 2011, at the beginning of that year, something called the Arab Spring has started. It was a movement of mass demonstrations across most of the Arab capitals, Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, and Syria. However, in Syria, it took a drastic turnaround because the demonstrations was met with violence by the ruling regime.
And once that violence came, people started to disperse all over?
Surely. Once the violence came and continued, people started to flee, and the opposition started to carry arms to protect themselves and to overthrow the regime, which made a large escalation in the bloodshed and in the number of casualties and the number of the refugees. We have now the latest statistics is around 6.5 million refugees dislocated inside Syria itself, and 2.5 million displaced as refugees in Jordan, Lebanon, and in Turkey. And the number is also increasing every day because the problem did not stop. It's not getting any better, and frankly, I don't believe in the 2 to 3 years we see any light at the end of the tunnel.
As you were giving your talk about the conflict between the Sunni Muslims and the Shia Muslims, can you give us a little more background on these two?
The first decade after Muhammad was dead, there was a real shift within the Muslim community around the issue of leadership. Who is the rightful caliph for Muslims? And there was two points of view. One point was that Ali, the cousin of the Prophet, and Fatima, the daughter of the Prophet, they are the true successors of Muhammad, and their lineage, the eldest son, will be the other succession, and so on. And they have around, the Shias have around 12 imams, and they consider them as the real and the rightful leaders for the community. However, the other group had another idea about who should be the leader. They thought that from the Sahaba, from the companions of Muhammad, any one of them is eligible if the community approves him. And there was a civil war that occurred between them, and now we are living ramifications or a reliving of this event that occurred in the first decade of Islam.
What is, percentage-wise, the number of Shia and the number of Sunni Muslims? And where do these two groups live?
The percentage of Sunnis are 85% worldwide. So they are the extreme majority. And historically, they are the ones who won the battles against the Shias. And the Shia went, as we say, underground and used something in Arabic we call taqiyya, which means they lay down and they approve the rule of the other party, but they did not accept it within themselves. And whenever they had the opportunity to revolt, they revolted against it. Currently, the Shia are around 12% worldwide. They are the majority live in Iran. 95% of it is Shia. And Iran has actually 40% of the Shia of the world. The other country in percentage is Iraq. 55% of it is Shia. Also, we have in Yemen, around 35% of the population are Shia. And in Lebanon, we have around also 35% are Shia. There are other Shias in Pakistan and Afghanistan, but with a lower percentage of 10%.
And it's in these countries where there is a large population that they are fighting each other?
If you look at the map now, each of these countries, with the exception of Iran, which has 95% Shia, there is a struggle and a conflict between them, including the Gulf country of Bahrain, which has around 60% Shia also. So in each of these countries, there is an internal struggle. There is an attempt of each party to control the country by violence, by force. In Bahrain, we see the Shia revolting against the Sunni government. In Yemen, currently, the Houthiyin, who are a Shia group, are surrounding the capital Sana'a, attempting to enter it or to force the government to give them concessions to be partakers in the government and to have a share in ruling the country. However, bloodshed between them has been witnessed and seen in Iraq, first after 2003. And the civil war that started there was around 500,000 people were dead in the conflict between Shias and Sunnis. Not only this, there are areas in Baghdad where the Shia have expelled the Sunnis from them, and now the city of Baghdad is almost 85% Shia. So it's a real mess, but now we're witnessing that in Syria we have this problem.
And on top of that, you throw in ISIS. And if I'm following you correctly, ISIS is mainly composed of Sunni Muslims?
ISIS, which is the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, is composed of Sunni fundamentalist Muslims. And they are around 25,000 military people called jihadi in their own language, which means holy warriors. They are all fanatical. They are all following an extreme form of understanding of Islam. And unfortunately, 50% of the people who are with ISIS came from outside Syria, from Europe, from England, from France, Belgium, Canada, United States, from Australia, from all over, the Gulf region, North Africa. All of these, 50% of the people who are fighting with ISIS came from outside Syria and are not Syrians.
And in the middle of all of this, we have small pockets of Christians who are caught. Can you tell us about what is happening to them and the terrible plight that they're in?
The worst, there are Syrians everywhere in Syria and in Iraq, but the places where ISIS took control, they had the most severe outcome. As you well know, in June of 2014, ISIS have launched a military operation against the Shia army of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. And within 2 weeks, they controlled all of north and the center of Iraq. And they expelled the Iraqi army and gave the Christians, not only the Christians, but all the minorities, the Shabak, the Yazidis, and the Christians, and the minority Shias also, who live in these areas, 48 hours either to convert to Islam or to pay the jizya, which is a high tax on each member of the family, or they will be killed. And before 48 hours were ended, all these minorities have escaped, creating a large exodus that is not witnessed in the last decade.
You also mentioned that many of these people are fleeing to Lebanon. How many refugees are in Lebanon? And I'm assuming that the number is growing day by day?
You're right. Now we have around 1,200 families, Iraqi Christian families, who arrived to Lebanon. Around 6,000 people altogether. They are coming gradually, most of them with the intention to immigrate to the West. And they are applying to the UN, and they are expecting within the coming 2 years, they'll be accepted to go outside.
And you also mentioned to me about the differences between the refugee camps in Jordan and Syria as compared to those in Lebanon.
In Jordan, the camps are under the control of the government. The government has created structured camps where they have an entrance, they have electricity, running water, sewage, and they control who gets in and who gets out. And they have one of the largest camps in all the region, now called Camp Al Yarmouk, which is an area in the desert that they have prepared it for the refugees. It has now around 600,000 refugees inside it. In Turkey also, the refugees are settling in organized camps created by the government with uniform tents. However, in Lebanon, the government decided that they do not want to have an organized camp because this will create a huge city inside Lebanon, which is a small country with 4 million people. And the government was afraid that once they provide them with the essentials of life, electricity and water and sewage and the opportunity to work, they will remain in the country and not go back to Syria. So they thought that using this strategy, they will force them, by living in an inhumane manner, they will return to Syria very quickly.
So how did you get involved with these mercy efforts to the people in the refugee camps?
As you know, we are a Christian Lutheran organization. Our hearts is to proclaim Christ and to witness His love and mercy to others as we felt them in our lives. When we saw this calamity and disaster, we felt the need to reach out to them and to dry their tears, as we say in Arabic. So we started to prepare food packages, and we utilized volunteers to help us to raise money from supporters, from sister churches in the United States, to support us to go there to provide them with the much needed food supplies, not only food supplies, but all what we would witness and see in the small camps that we have visited, which are around 9 camps throughout the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon.
The people you're visiting come from the Bekaa Valley and from Syria. So I'm assuming that most of them are Muslims?
You're right. They're mainly Muslim, and they're mainly with the opposition against the regime.
And how are you received as a Christian, particularly a Lutheran, in these camps?
There is always suspicion, there is always worry, there is always questions of why are you doing this, what is there for you, and all of these questions.
How do you answer those questions? Because, boy, they sound to me like really good questions.
What we always say that Christ have asked us always to love one another and to show this love to the world the way He loved us. And this is what we wanted to reflect with them. And we always inform them that Christ have told us that He is in the hungry person, He is in the thirsty person, in the person who has no clothes. And we are doing this to become closer to Christ and to help them and to make them understand our faith and the Christ that we believe in.
And have you been well received with that message?
They surely understand that we are expressing what we believe and living our faith with them. We are not offending them. We are not imposing anything on them. We are just saying this is what we believe in. And this comes not, of course, in an evangelistic way. We don't go there to preach. We just answer questions whenever we are there. It's an informal setting for a person who seeks to know more about who we are and what we believe in.
Might you give us a bit more of an idea of the structure? of how you carry these relief efforts out?
As you well know, we are a small organization. This is a catastrophe of 1.3 million. We cannot handle this large amount. What we try to do is we try to do our best with small camps, around 50 tents each. We have went to them before we provided any materials. We have sat with them, listened to their needs, listened to their worries, listened to their interests, and registered what their needs are. If there is a person who is sick, we try to bring him the medicine that is suitable for him. We realize there is a need for hygiene materials for children, for infants and toddlers. So we go back, we arrange with the materials, we bring the milk, the diapers, the cereals, all the food supplies, and we contact all the volunteers that we have. They help us in the packaging process. We divide the food in equal portions in all the packages, and we try to distribute them to all the families in the tents according to a pre-organized list of each family, and they sign a letter, they sign that they have received the food.
That's very interesting. I think most people who are not involved in relief efforts would think that you would go in with the food first. But in fact, you go in to talk to people first?
The purpose is to be one-on-one. Like we have, it's not only relief and full stop. It's an attempt to show that we care, that we want to know how can we serve them. We look at the person holistically and not only from the physical side. Especially that there are in these camps a lot of children. Around more than 50% of the camps are children who are very young. And as you know, they have witnessed all these disasters, all the bombings, all the war, all the bloodshed, all the injuries. Many children are orphans now. Many have lost fathers. Many have handicapped mothers. So when we go there, we see in their eyes the worry about their future. We see that they are lost. There is no education. And nobody cares for them. And there is no ability for the government of Lebanon to help them get educated. This is a real misery. And maybe this is the real disaster, because you have a future generation which is all facing trauma. And you know the implications of this on the psychological level of the human being.
And is there anything being done to assist them with this?
We are now trying to organize something along the side of abolishing illiteracy for the infants and for the children. It's just to teach them basic language skills, basic calculation skills, math, and basic words of English, so that they are not lost completely. We have not done anything relating to their psychological level, because this is a huge effort. It's beyond the potentials of our own organization.
As you mentioned, it's a small organization, and you do more than just mercy and humanitarian relief. You also are the director of the Lutheran Hour in Lebanon. Can you tell us about some of the responsibilities you have with regard to that?
The office in Lebanon has a radio broadcasting program. We broadcast to the Middle East, to around 12 countries in the Middle East and in the Gulf, a program in the Arabic language done by indigenous people, local people from the staff. We do it in the Arabic language. Each program is around 13 episodes, and we do contemporary programs related, depending on the situation around us. So each program is intended to speak to the people depending on the situation that we face in the Middle East.
Many of us may not associate Lebanon with Christianity, but can you tell us a little bit about the Christian church in Lebanon?
Within Lebanon, you might be surprised to know that the Christians were actually the majority 70 years ago. Unfortunately, due to the civil war in 1975 until 1990, many of the Christians immigrated outside the country. The level of the percentage of increase of Muslims was much higher than the increase of Christians in terms of having more children per family. So this has created this have shifted the balance towards now we have a majority of Muslims in the country. Around 70% of the population is actually Muslim now. However, most of the Christians in Lebanon are historic Christians, meaning that they trace back to Catholicism and to Orthodoxy, or the Eastern Church. And typically in Lebanon, we have the Maronite Church, which is in partnership with the Catholic Church. They are the majority, and then comes the Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox, and then come the Greek Catholics, who are Catholics but follow the Byzantine Eastern rites in their liturgy. And the smallest group is the evangelical group, evangelical churches that started with the coming of missionaries in the late 19th century.
If our listeners would like to find out more about the work that the Lutheran Hour in Lebanon is doing, you can go to lhmlebanon.wordpress.com. Fadi, I'd like to thank you so very much for being our guest. And our prayers are with you as you carry out this amazing work that you are doing in Lebanon.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.